Okay, good evening, everybody.
Right.
Seats is back and deep.
Don't worry.
Normally I do. I don't today. All right. Joy got me the gavel. All right. Welcome to what appears to be an intimate gathering of the RAC this evening. Hopefully it'll be a relatively informal evening. In theory, we have a lighter agenda for this evening. So we'll see if we can actually manage to fill the full 2 hours. I have a feeling that there's a good chance that we might still be able to fill a full 2 hours anyway. But going ahead and starting, I'm actually going to skip the approval of the agenda for the moment because we don't have quorum yet. We may or may not have quorum, but I'm nonetheless going to proceed to go through the agenda as though we have approved it. I'm going to call that the prerogative of the chair. And we'll also skip approving the past meeting minutes. That may need to wait until next meeting, depending on how many people we have showing up here. I hope everybody had a lovely holiday, by the way. Glad you're all back in D.C., if anybody was gone. Glad nobody blew themselves up with fireworks. Well, it apparently happened with watermelons and other such things on the mall as demonstrations of why to not lean over your fireworks when you're setting them off. We're making it great again. So, starting with public comment period, we do not seem to have too many members of the public here, although I do want to highlight that we do have Catherine Hudgens here, one of our Metro Board members, not officially on the agenda, but I nonetheless want to give you the chance to say hi and anything else that strikes your fancy. Feel free to at least introduce yourself.
Then make a few comments, and I'll let you get to your meeting, and if there's additional comments that you might have, I'd be glad to welcome. But as noted, I'm Kathy Hudgens, Metro Board member, and I'm from Fairfax County, and I'm a voting member. I've been on the board. I say this with a bit of just, I'm probably the oldest one there. And by age, I don't mean necessarily my age, but I also mean my tenure. I came on the board in 2004. So I think I've been the continuity, and I hope the continuity isn't that the changes that have occurred in the system or where we are is all owed to me, but rather hopefully there's some sense of stability somewhere in the system. And I was just saying when I came on the board, there was no Writers Advisory Committee, which was a very interesting piece. And, tendency at board meetings is that there would be 5, 6, 7 citizens that want to tell us something to do, and they go away and they come back and there'd be another 6 or 7, and we never got around to the to-dos. It was that you could always listen to people and couldn't use that advice as well. And so we established it, and I think, and became an advocate for it, because in my local board, that is the standard by which we do business. Almost everywhere you go, you have to have a public input process, and I think this one has sort of matured quite well. We can always have some challenges with it in some way or the other, and I think that's on both sides, but I think functionally it provides the forum for a bigger citizen-involved process, so it's your riders and members of the system, so you need to be in the discussions of the things that we do. So I've enjoyed my tenure for quite a long time. I'll let you go ahead if you'd like with your meeting, but start with questions of how you might do it. This was scheduled. I don't want to have Catherine carry the burden of this. We wanted to make sure that we were getting support members at your meetings, and we think that has been helpful, but I had not been for a while, and so I thought I would put my name down, and I thought I was scheduled. Unfortunately, I wasn't so scheduled or coordinated, but I'm glad to be here. She'll take
We're
me.
Glad to have
I,
you.
I appreciate that.
Anybody have any questions or anything they perhaps not want to ask but say? Tsitsa?
Hi, Tsitsa. We were, Tsitsa Gopard, we were talking before. You mentioned that you serve on the customer service committee of the board, correct?
That's correct.
Well, I was just wondering what, among the customer service committee, what types of issues of, trying to improve a lot of customer service, and what types of things are they looking at? are they most concerned about? And I ask that because that's been one of the sort of foremost issues that we often talk about here, and I'm just wondering what the board is interested in doing with regards to improving customer service.
Well, our committee addresses all of those things that you look at in customer relationships. We look at, well, first of all, we do what I call the fiduciary pieces. We bring all of the types of issues that require public input and that public approval before that committee. We look at the all of the processes we've been going through to improve the system and how that improvement is going to occur and the measurements that we use to evaluate them. Any kind of service changes, and it's called customer service is, it's a three title. It includes public safety as well. So we get a public safety report, we get reports and input on management, changes in the system, and those kinds of things. And so it's a pretty broad spectrum of anything that you think that the customer is going to react to or be affected by. And it's a, and it is a committee, and our committee structure has changed frequently. And now we have one representative from each of the jurisdictions that are on that committee. I think it's a broad discussion, really, that you could have there, because I think safety, it becomes a really broad issue. We want you to be a safe rider on the trains. We want you to be safe in the stations. We want you to be safe getting to the stations. You know, we don't have just the perimeter of Metro. Folks who have to travel those bus stops outside the station areas, there's the eyes of the locality plus the Metro plus public safety that overlook that. I think the other part that it is part of safety is the right information that gets out to the customer. The reliability is very important in terms of making the system reliable, but without the customer knowing what we're going to do with them every day, you really aren't going to be a not only convenient and satisfied customer, but you may not be safe as far as you're concerned. So you hear the changes of service delivery so that you hear that in time enough to plan for your own environment. And those are the things that I think make up a lot. I think what you've seen, for example, what we've done with buses in terms of saying, okay, we know what some risks are of being a bus driver. How do we keep those bus drivers safe? I thought it was very interesting just 2 days ago, yesterday, 2 days ago I think it was, that the shields that have been put on all the buses were very helpful during the, I call them the youth deciding that they were going to put their fireworks and throw them into the bus. First of all, that was bad, but the fact that we had made some concerns known about those issues and to let our customers know that sometimes there are some bad actors in the system that you need to be aware of that. But also they protected those bus drivers who put their lives on the line. So, I mean, there's a plethora of things that go about you being able to come into the system and get that safe ride that you intend. I think what Paul Wiedefeld has done is escalated in a very short time the importance of what a safe trip means to people. And I'll just give you an example of an experience I had. And I ride the system from Fairfax every time I come to Metro. It's my source of transportation. And it was in one of the incidents that had occurred, and we were offloaded. We were taken going back to Fairfax County to McPherson to re-enter the system for a Civil Line ride. And as I got on the train, we were just out of Boston, and I was rocking in my seat. I mean, I was rocking that I could barely stay in my seat. And I picked up the phone and I called somebody. But just as I was calling, the train operator said, we're going to offload this train, we're going to offload this train. This train is not safe. We're offloading this train. And I felt good about that afterwards. Yes, we were packed on the platform. But my thought was, what if he hadn't said it? And would I call into the system been fast enough to be whatever the problem was? It turns out that the ties or whatever rails were so on a line that that was going to be another derailment if possible. So I think all of those things are the things that are very important when you think about safety. So the work that's been done over the Safe Track, we hope that that prepares us for having a more consistent safety operation. There'll always be some kind of incident, but we should be prepared to say that we've done the best that we can do to prevent those.
Thanks, Joe. Here, I'm wondering about just
where
accountability.
Are you from,
Joe? DC.
Oh, DC.
Yes. So I rode the X2 bus this weekend on Sunday to go to the grocery store or whatever, and it just took a long time, like over an hour to arrive. And when it finally arrived, there were two buses right next to each other because one of them obviously had some delay or whatever. I'm wondering what, and I get a lot of these, we get a lot, we have a Facebook page, facebook.com/WMATARAC. Yes.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay, yes, okay.
So we get maybe a handful a week of just complaints also, and we have to do a better job telling them we're not, keep coming to us, but also go to the customer service. But what do we do in terms of, or what does WMATA do in terms of keeping bus drivers, not just accountable, but making the schedules, I know it says every 25 minutes it's supposed to arrive, but making it more transparent and open so that riders, policymakers at WMATA or whatever can do a better job of making sure that things are on time, are on schedule, people aren't waiting for a long time. And if they are waiting for a long time, what could they do to help WMATA to improve or besides filling out that form? Is there a more real-time, accessible way to kind of get things?
Well, I know we have... I have to beg a little ignorance on this part. I thought we have a smart trip piece that allows us to track that. And the question is, I think your question is, when they tell me, as they told me today, the length of my trip, it was really faster than, and I was on the train, so that's what the comparison. So are you telling me that on the bus, you don't get that real time as closely aligned?
I guess just in terms of if the bus is, says it's supposed to arrive at 11:30, but it comes at 12:10. Like,
and 12:10 is
I'm like
later.
Waiting for like an hour.
No.
It's supposed to be here, you know, every 25 minutes. It's not here. I'm late. I'm sweating outside. I'm mad now.
Yeah.
What can I as a rider do to let WMATA know? Hey,
I think that
this bus driver didn't get here on time. I'm unreasonably mad.
I think your reporting it is very important. And one of the things that we try and do in the customer service is we go over some of these things. We go over the on-time performance because, remember, we're tracking all of this. We always say we're trying to say we're tracking it all. And so, to me, that's what goes back to general manager and his bus operations to go back and say, you know, how are you going to, we're going to make these adjustments. Sometimes they're not within all of our control, but for example, I would have been very disturbed if there was going to be a 25-minute delay if it told me it was going to be within I think, 40, almost an hour.
I trust as a RAC member that, you know, someone's keeping track of it, but can we make it transparent so that we know, like Domino's pizza tracker, you know, like, you know exactly where the pizza is.
Well, I tell you what, yes.
This is like when the bus will get here, but sometimes it doesn't arrive.
It should save your life.
I tried it too, but.
If it's not accurate, we need to tell them.
Yes, and that's
accurate.
Well,
then we need to tell them.
Yeah, okay, I'm telling you guys now.
Yeah.
I tried that, yeah. Yeah, but like, once it happens, like once it's done.
Well, I think your question is really the real crux of trying to do all of this tracking. I think it should be able to point you, and I think we say 10 minutes early or and another. And we should know. I can understand that. And so I think you need to report it. I think reporting it helps it. We should be tracking them. They have information so that they can see what time that bus arrives.
So, like, can everyone see it? Like, if it's, like, an Excel spreadsheet or, like, you know, Google Docs or, I don't know. Something
yes.
that's, like, very transparent so that we know
that's
exactly.
That's a good question. I would think that it is available, but I can't say that, so I would ask that. I'm in Fairfax County right now, and we've just started the, I can't think of the name of what they're calling it, but it's going to give us the real time. I can track that bus throughout, and so I'll know where it is before it gets to me, and that kind of thing. And I think this one is supposed to be working.
Yeah, and if we could tie it to driver and see, like, why is this particular bus always late all the time?
SQ? Is that what you said? What was your bus?
X2. Not
X2?
Some, yeah, it's,
okay.
It's not frequent or anything. It's just, I'm just flagging this in general.
But I think the ones late. That are, you should flag, and that helps. I think it helps the system.
Like, I'm really pushing for just transparency in general. Like, if it could be open somehow, some way, I'm sure more people would be able to see, oh, wow, this line in particular during this time of the day is very crowded or it's not running on time ever. Like, what can we do to remedy those? Because right now, we don't really track any of that and we're not making improvements.
Or
maybe we are.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. For sure.
And we definitely have the data, and I understand
yeah, I guess I know for a fact, like, I trust that it's being tracked, like I said in the very beginning, like, that someone's keeping track of this, but none of the riders know when or where, or, like, how it's being tracked, or, you know, it's not very transparent to the rider. So if it can be more transparent, I think that wouldn't be a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think
that, like, aggregate kind of statistic, but in terms of just being, okay, just as a rider, I want to know, like...
You'd like to know what stop he is before you. Would that help you? Is that kind of...
I mean, just, I want as much data as possible so I can dice it any way I want or just see it any way I want, like, instead of...
Colin, do you want to jump in?
I would love to. Yeah, so...
I know the vital signs.
So that does speak to a question that I asked Jamie Bell, who's back in my previous year, which is, we've asked via it's about transparency in general, and with regard to performance data, yes, we see kind of the high level, you know, aggregate data and vital signs of importance in that nature, but we don't get more granular level performance. So, for example, which of the lines you're probably for that's what's kind of a mystery to riders. We're on the platforms, we're seeing longer waits, we're, you know, oftentimes interacting with personnel who, you know, either are rude or not communicating appropriately. And you know, I think a lot of riders are asking the question, is this still worth it for me? And so I think a lot of needs to show them that it is.
And then we're paying more for it and then less service.
Well, that is from our coming customer service committee that we're going to be talking about those efforts of trying to figure out what are those other things that we can provide to the customer. I think the point about your data is I think sometimes because of the voluminous part of the data that you collect, it's often very difficult. But I do think there are opportunities to use that data that the public can see so that they can really say that I was trying to find the system that we have in Fairfax because, for example, it's really tracking flux and that kind of information. I don't think we go to quite that same. I don't know that exactly. I rely on staff, but I know that you can get your arrival time and that kind of information. But if you're able to say, I know the arrival time is late or on time because I was tracking it and I found that, you know, this is a challenge. So I think I really do think your concerns there very important because I think that we really do owe the customers the justification of the time and investment of resources they've spent in the system over the past 2 years is worth an explanation of how we get to a more reliable system and a safer system.
A more open system. And I think Vermont staff is doing a great job, but how do we get to the next level to get it
right.
More open?
Hi. Sorry I'm late. I had some transportation issues. Are we on a particular subject matter, or is it ad hoc?
We're talking about whatever strikes your fancy.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't going to go off rail here. So I'm Deb McKenzie, and just pertaining back to what Joe was talking about the bus getting there late, and then Valerie was trying to show them the app and whatnot, I have found very consistently that the bus ETA or the different apps that are out there are consistently wrong. They're not, a lot of times I've called and I've said, hey, this is saying this, and they said, well, it's really, we just punched the schedule in, and it's just telling you what the schedule says. So it's not really giving you the actual lead time of, oh, we're running a little behind today, there was traffic or whatever. So as an example, I was at a bus stop, I had looked on the web, here's where I'm supposed to be, and the first time zone it was supposed to be there, it didn't come, so, oh, it's running a little. Anyway, two time zones passed when the bus was supposed to be there, I called customer service. She goes, well, I can see him on the GPS right now, and he should be there in 5 minutes. And she said, he's there, and I said, there's no bus here. Well, we found out that, you know, the website, the bus stop on the website and what the bus driver had on his cheat sheet were different. And so he was going, it was wrong. He was new to this, you know, he was going to this bus stop. I was standing at this bus stop and they weren't where you could see each other. I have found that happening quite a few times, actually, where one piece of data, either on the web or on a printed bus schedule, is different than what the bus driver has. And I've even sat there with the bus driver and said, well, this is what this says, and we're looking at them and they're different. And I'm talking about a current schedule, not, you know, something that's outdated. So I think we had mentioned this before. I was wondering, you know, as far as, like, when people call in to the customer service center and say, hey, you know, this bus is late or I don't know where this bus is, is that data compiled somewhere where somebody could analyze it and say, well, gee, we got 30 calls on this one bus line last month. Maybe we should do something. Do you know what happens once the information comes in to customer service? Is the frontline operator just logging it and saying, I'm sorry, I can't help you? Or is it going into a bigger database that's being analyzed?
My understanding is it goes into the bus center, wherever that call, that bus goes to be logged with the operator and then the manager for that area of the system. And that's where that data is. That information is collected and it's accessible to all levels of management. That's the understanding that I have. So I, and looking at the real time is not part of it. Just being able to say real time, it has to be connected to reporting.
Real time's never going to be
it's not
obtainable, but at least something that when Bus ETA would at least have an idea that, oh, this route's really slow today because there was an accident. You know, at least giving some sort of, if people really think in this, in our age of, you know, you go to the airport and you know when the planes are coming and delayed and stuff, I think they're thinking that we have that technology. We don't, but I'm saying they think Bus ETA is telling me when the bus is going to come, and most times it doesn't. So,
I'll have to put that in the hopper to give you some better information.
Bob?
I think I just want to reiterate what Colin said. SafeTrack is great. Anything that makes the system safer and more reliable, physical system, it's a good system. But there are an awful lot of riders who your mentor needs to be back. If you don't win them back, then you're really, the system is going to face a serious financial crisis. And the stuff I read, traditional public transit to use. So it's going to even be tougher to win them back. But the issues that other my colleagues have raised are issues that have probably been around the last 30 years. I would imagine that if you hear about a lousy bus route where things are always late, you probably can go back 30 years and find out that it was a lousy bus route 30 years ago, and it was always there. My only experience with that is when I moved to Washington, where the bus, the 30 buses that start southeast and go up Capitol Hill and up Pennsylvania Avenue and downtown, and then up French Heights. I used to live in D.C., and I would take them. But there were like there was a 30, and a 32, and a 34, and a 36. And invariably, you'd wait a half an hour, and all of a sudden, buses and bus. Well, it's still happening. I mean, again, it's only anecdotal. I ride on occasion. I hear from people. But I think some serious, people need a good, are going to need a good excuse, a really good excuse to ride, continue riding the system. I just urge you to ask those questions. Be vigilant. Make sure that serving the ridership first.
Well, I appreciate that because that really is the most important part. And I think as we refer again to the next customer service, the agenda piece points to the fact that we know that we've lost riders, and thus if we cannot give these riders a reason to come back because they have chosen other options, which was a good thing doing the safe track and the ladder. We want them to come back, and if we want them to come back, we're going to have to give them a good reason to do so. And they will be able to, we'll be able to measure it, and hopefully you'll be with us on it, because I think that's going to be the critical importance of Metro, because as you say, transportation is changing. Just in general, it's changing. So if this system is going to be the, I still consider it a really phenomenal system, but I know that, you know, the inconvenience is overwhelming at times. And so we hope that we're headed on the right track after all of this work. And the work is going to be done over the next couple of years. And I really do believe that one of the things that we're focused on is that the region understands the investments that are needed for that, but that this should not be an excuse for what is not good performance. And that's one of the things that we have to sort out. What's not good performance and what we need to invest in order to make this system the kind of system. Okay.
That seemed like an excellent place to put a pin in the discussion.
Well, I want to thank you. Thank you. I'm glad I had an opportunity to come. I'll be back. And I think it's important that board members will bring back this information and try our best to funnel it out to you, because we appreciate the work that you do, and you're our best advocates, really. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. We always appreciate when the board comes to see us. Now that we have quorum, a couple of little agenda items to take care of, one of them being the agenda. I'm just going to make this real simple. Any opposition to approving the agenda as written, given that we have already started following it? Sort of. Hearing none, I'm going to consider the agenda approved. This is, by the way, the Jack Evans method of handling a board meeting. With regard to the meeting minutes for last month, I'm assuming everybody had a chance to look at them. Is there any opposition to approving the meeting minutes as written? Okay. One abstention. Anybody else have any changes or comments about the minutes? All right. Then we're calling that good, too. And we have lost our staff person, but we are forging ahead regardless. So still no public comments, which is just fine by me, which means that I guess I will get to talk a little bit here about the long-range plan of the MWCOG. And this is going to be an acronym fest. So get ready with your alphabet soup here. How many of you are familiar with MWCOG? It is. It is the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. Every metropolitan area in the country that has at least 50,000 people and receives any federal funding for transportation is required by the feds to have some sort of this planning organization that does long-term planning for the region. The feds are unwilling to provide money to any city that can't say that they at least have a clue what that money is going to accomplish, what the plans that the city has are going to do for the city. A lot of this is based around air quality requirements. So every major city, every city over 50,000, has one of these. DC's is called MWCOG, the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. They are headquartered over on North Capitol Street. They have a number of boards within them, one of which is the Transportation Planning Board, the TPB. Much like WMATA, their Transportation Planning Board has a citizens group. They call it the CAC. They don't happen to call it the CAC, which I think is probably in everybody's best interest. They just call it the CAC. But they are largely analogous to us. They are just not specifically looking at WMATA. They are looking at the region as a whole. And like us, they also have representatives from D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. They meet once a month in the evenings. The public is more than welcome to attend. I'm also a member of the CAC. I'm the only one who calls it that. So I am definitely not the chair of that one, but I am at least a bit of information that can come back to us as a member of both organizations. But any of you are more than welcome to attend this and potentially join it. I imagine that it's not necessarily a well-known organization, so some of you may not have even known that it existed. Yeah. They are Thursday evenings toward the middle of the month. I'll have to get back to you on exactly which day they are. So that I can totally fine. In fact, let me open my calendar so I can tell you that the next one is on the 13th, so a week from tomorrow. I would argue that we're cooler. Yeah. So feel free to attend and make the decision yourself. But one significant difference between the two organizations is that much of what WMATA does is based on short-term planning. And a lot of that is because WMATA has been very focused on triage these last several years. They've had a lot of very short-term concerns. So their planning has been on the order of the length of safe track, or thinking a couple of years in the future. The COG is required by federal law to look much further into the future. Specifically, they are currently looking at 2045. Back in the 1950s, we thought we'd have flying cars by now. I'm not totally convinced that's going to be revolutionizing the transportation world by then, but 100 plus years later, those are still iffy. So as they are looking at 2045, they have a much longer time frame. They do not think in terms of the next 3 years so much. They think in terms of the next 30 plus. Because a lot of the projects they're looking at are the big type projects that would require that much time in order to get the funding, the regulations, in order to get everything going. So the WMATA rack and the COGS CAC are an interesting complement to each other, because one is looking so short term and the other is looking long term, and both can feed into each other reasonably well. As they are putting their long term plan together, certainly one of the major transportation things that this region is looking at is what on earth is going on with WMATA. There's a lot of transportation needs that the area has, but WMATA is at the forefront of a lot of these. So they are getting input from the public in a variety of ways, none of which I think are being very well publicized, but they are trying to do it. They have surveys that are going out that will be open through the end of July. They plan to be at a lot of different metro stations and various parking lots and community events, trying to get feedback from the general public, especially those who are not usually well represented in such surveys, trying to get input on what the community, what the entire metro area actually thinks is necessary. Yes. I know, I never seem to run into them either. Apparently they're everywhere except wherever I am. Yes, it's visualize2045.org. That is where you can find more information about how to provide input to this particular survey. So they are in the midst of working on that. As part of this plan, one of their first steps is to figure out what the impact of a lot of these different possible investments would be. They have a task force that is looking at what projects and plans should be part of the 2045 plan. And that task force came up with an initial list of, I believe it was 49 different items that should be considered transportation-wise. And I don't have a list of all 49, I don't think, here, but it's everything from what you might imagine. We'll expand the Beltway. We'll add another Potomac crossing of either a highway or of COGS, or, the Roslyn Tunnel, add to the Roslyn Tunnel. Purple Line extensions, addressing top five congestion hotspots, wherever they may be. Reversible lanes on highways, addressing east-west divides, incorporating Uber and Lyft and other shared mobility providers into the transportation system. So they've got this very long list of all the different things that are possibly considered. And it's kind of a brainstorm through everything at a wall. They intend to have their next step is to take a look at these 49, and they've divided them into what they call bundles, which are these small groups of projects that they have decided are related, which generally they actually are related, which is encouraging to see that they have decided something correctly. And they are going to do some analysis on these different bundles to see what the effects would actually be in terms of cost, in terms of congestion, in terms of environmental air quality. They're largely doing a bit of a sensitivity analysis on this to determine if we add express lanes up to 70, how much effect is that actually going to have between now and 2045? If we change zoning requirements to encourage more density around metro stations, what effect is that actually going to have? And certainly a lot of these things will play into one another. Nothing can be taken in a vacuum. And so you do have to take a lot of their analysis that they are doing, the modeling that they are doing with a little bit of, more than a little, with a big block of salt. Because it is modeling, we're trying to guess what's going to happen in 2045, and everything plays into each other, so there's no way to really say, well, if we just change this one thing, this is clearly what's going to happen. But it can nonetheless give you a bit of an idea as to what the total effect will be about changing zoning or changing policies about HOV lanes or adding funding to WMATA. And that's where we, not exactly, but that's sort of where we can provide a little bit of input. When the CAC did its initial round of thinking about what was important, one of those deals where you put a whole bunch of ideas on the wall, everybody has a couple of dots, and everybody sticks their dots on whatever idea they think is most important, and then we see which item looks like it has the worst set kind of chicken pox. The things that seemed most important to the citizens advisory group of that group were expanding the Purple Line, which may have been a little hopeful because that requires there be a Purple Line in the first place. But regardless, by 2045, we were counting on an expansion of the Purple Line. And we also considered an expansion of the Roslyn Tunnel, a second tunnel, some way of alleviating that bottleneck to be a priority. So those were the two top transportation priorities for the region, and they were both transit-oriented, which says something about the importance of WMATA to this region, that those overcame any needs about the Beltway or many of the other car-oriented options that are out there for transportation over the next 30 years. So the CAC has given its input to this task force. The task force is made up of board members. Just like the WMATA board, the COG has its own board members who are actually making these decisions. The CAC provides its input, which has a varying level of effect, much like happens here sometimes. But nonetheless, having the representatives of the region provide input is certainly a good thing, regardless of exactly how much influence that has. So most of this is just letting you know that this is going on, that there is a sister citizens advisory group out there that is looking at transportation as a whole, and that has decided that WMATA is arguably the largest priority for this region, specifically the funding of WMATA. Much of this planning for 2045 is trying to figure out, we've got some money, there's never enough money, where should it go? In trying to determine what the effects of providing those limited dollars. Officially, this thing is called a constrained long-range plan, which means it's not just completely pie in the sky, but it means that there is a total dollar amount and we have to stop when we hit that dollar amount. The pie in the sky plans are a whole lot more fun, I have to say, but they're also kind of worthless. So any of y'all are more than welcome to come to any of the CAC meetings. They also provide dinner, just so you know. It's a good dinner. So you're welcome to come to those. The public, there are also public comments and public times to talk there. You would get another view of what is going on in the transportation world and the policy world, something that's looking both a little further into the future than a lot of what WMATA does, and something that is more federally focused. Everything we talk about here tends to be very regional. We talk about Maryland, Virginia, and D.C., with occasional references to the feds because they are here. But the COG is very focused on federal requirements for how all of the funding works when it comes from the U.S. DOT. So feel free to attend. Feel free to provide your input. As both a WMATA RAC member and a COG CAC member, I will certainly be pushing for all kinds of focus on WMATA's needs over the next few years. And we did invite the COG staff to come to this meeting to talk about their long-range plan and the process, which is a totally convoluted process. Whenever you're dealing with the feds, of course, every process becomes about 17 times more complicated than you think it should be. They declined for a number of reasons, and some of the CAC members who are the liaisons to this particular task force were unavailable tonight, which means that you're stuck with me. I am not necessarily the expert on how this long-range plan works or all of the details of the process that is going on here, but I can tell you that they hope to choose among these bundles of projects which ones are going to get analysis, which ones will have the statistical analysis done over the next couple of months. They can't analyze all 49 projects. They have staff that only have so many hours in a day. So they're focusing on which projects they will analyze. And then by the end of the year, based on the results of the analyses, the modeling that they have done, they will determine which of these projects are going to go into the long-range plan. Again, it is a plan. So even if something ends up in the plan, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to get built or it's going to get funded, but it will nonetheless be representative of what this region considers its priorities. And the first one I saw was Colin, so I will.
This is just a clarifying question. The thrust of this is really about how to allocate the federal transportation dollars or the broader that.
Both. Short answer. Okay.
Tisa? I also wanted to clarify and follow up on the last question.
brought up. Say, for example, the COG chooses, you know, it votes on a bundle, you know, it does its analysis and something gets passed through. I guess at that point, what type of influence would that long-term plan have, you know, would the ideas necessarily be adopted, who would they go to? And I'm just curious as to the sort of influence that plan has, and of course, how we can get our voice heard in that.
Once the plan is created, it is a statement of guiding principles, effectively. It does not necessarily have any binding legislation or anything attached to it. It is just an agreement that the region has come to. This is a region, like many others, that has all kinds of different jurisdictions in it. We've got a bunch of different states, we've got a bunch of different cities and counties and jurisdictions that all have their own zoning requirements, for example. And it would require all of those organizations, all those jurisdictions, to agree to follow this plan. They don't have to. The COG can decide not to. The COG is the one that gets the federal funding and then distributes it out to the member jurisdictions. So the COG can penalize, to an extent, some of the jurisdictions for not playing along by holding back some of their funding, but they don't have a lot of control over what the local jurisdictions do. So much of this is just trying to gather a consensus from all the local jurisdictions so that everybody is on the same page. We could call this a little bit like the Paris Climate Accord, where it's not actually punitive. We just got everybody on the same page, at least at one point, and everybody is hoping to try to play along to reach the same goals. The COG is clearly in support of the Purple Line, and that has not necessarily made that one go smoothly or at all at this point either. But they are one of the few organizations that in the area that is looking that far forward in terms of what the transportation needs of the region are. Valerie, did you want to ask something else? By all means. That was not included in the sense of build better flood walls along the Potomac or any. There are not specific environmental resilience, sustainability, whatever word we use, things to consider here. The intention is more that the projects that are considered will have an overall beneficial environmental effect, which won't necessarily stop the Potomac from rising, but might improve air quality in the region and might improve the quality of the Potomac, however high it is. Right, the water that is coming through your front door will be slightly cleaner than it might have been otherwise. Joseph.
I know their plan is for 2045 and potentially beyond. Do they have any sample plans that you could refer to that has an earlier horizon?
Yes, they do these regularly, somewhat regularly, I believe every 5 years, so there should, I believe, maybe steering you wrong here, but I think there should be one on the books for 2040 and then 2035. So those would have been, you know, the previous ones. 2045 is just our next go-round.
How accurate, like, how long have they been doing this and, like, have these plans mapped out to be, like, has this been going on for the past century, and then we've seen an example of a plan that's actually, you know, come to fruition?
none of the plans ever come to fruition exactly as they stand, in large part because they're modified over time. I mean, we're looking, when we're doing a 30-year plan, 5 years from now we look at it again and it changes. So it's hard to say that the plan that we did 30 years ago is even relevant necessarily. Times change, the Potomac rises. There are all kinds of different issues that come up along the way. So it's hard to say exactly that these plans have or have not gone into effect exactly as stated because they evolve over time. But they definitely do have an impact on the general direction that transportation and development in the region go.
When are these plans potentially amended in the future? Like, I know it's 2045, and I'm guessing this plan will be wrapped up by the end of this year, spring, or something like that, end of summer. And then after a certain amount of time period elapses, the plan gets amended again, like every 5 years or every 3 years?
The plan gets updated and resubmitted, yes. So the plan, the 2045 plan, when it's completed, not that these plans are really ever complete, they're very much living documents, it will be the operating orders, or the operating suggestions, anyway, for the next several years until we start taking a look at whatever the next 30, 35-year plan will be.
Is there like a prescribed guideline for that timeline? Like every 3 years, we'll look at the plan to see and adjust, or is it just ad hoc kind of?
I'm not sure exactly what the timing on that one is. These do tend to be referenced over time, and every few years, I think it's every five, but I'm not sure if I've got that right. They actually create an official plan.
Thanks. I'm new to this, though. Thanks.
I know some about it, but I'm definitely not an expert on all of this. I wish some of the real experts were here to talk to you, but we'll go with this for now. Paul.
Cynical because every time someone sets up another organization, there's another chance for something to help. And there's long-term planning here at Metro. We have a whole planning department upstairs. They've been talking about the Roswell Tunnel for as long as I've lived here and probably even before that. And if somebody on the MW COG, which I think is a commercial organization as well, I don't try to think it's feeding, but if someone in that organization says, no, we don't want to do a Roswell Tunnel, probably is a little less likely to happen. So it's sort of, I don't want to say I'm cynical, because I'm not, but I feel that there's a way that every time another organization exists, there's another way. They have their own set of priorities. They have their own mission. I was looking, for example, this wasn't MWCOG, but I was looking at BTA, which is Northern Virginia Transit Authority. I was looking at their list of priorities for the next well, and there was not a single transit item on that list with the exception of some bus ramps and maybe some express buses. That was the thing. So I don't know what MWCOG might have its own concepts about expansion. Like you're talking about purple line expansion. MBTA has no interest in purple line expansion. At least, I assume when you're talking about purple line expansion, you mean like to go all the way around the Beltway. Yeah, MBTA has no interest in that. So you've already got, among people that do care about transportation, you've got people butting heads and not one person asking, hey, what did Vermont think about this? Because obviously, if you have Purple Line, I'm just using that as an example, obviously Metro, though not being built by Metro, you're going to want Metro's input as to how that Purple Line gets built, if it ever does. So I guess the best constructive thing I could say is there a way that people from the CAC and, Citizens Advisory Council Committee, and the RAC, and maybe some of these other citizens-oriented organizations, maybe we can find a way to, have a...
Citizens United.
but is there a way, like, we can have, like, a social event, or at least like maybe we could talk online about some of this so that maybe we're on the same page on some of this, because obviously they're thinking, if we're more of a short-term organization, they're more of a long-term, we've got to start talking to each other if anything's going to happen. And there are a lot of other metropolitan areas that we're competing with that have their act together,
have a bunch of organizations that are doing separate things, we're not going to get those dollars.
I could not agree more that there are a lot of organizations that are doing relatively similar things without necessarily talking to each other. And while the citizens groups of these organizations may not be the most powerful parts of the organizations, all we can do is say things, and who knows how seriously anyone takes it. If we're all saying the same thing, it seems like that should matter, which is a big part of the reason that I wanted to at least create some connection here. If there's any way to create some sort of an event where we have at least those two citizens groups and whatever other citizens groups would be relevant, then that would be great too. I don't know how quickly something like that can be gotten together. I don't know how much everybody would be on the same page, although I would guess that for the most part, a lot of people would be in agreement that there are a few things that are of key importance to the region, transportation-wise, and that those things are WMATA-based, at least many of them. I will say that for the task force that they have put together, the task force of non-citizens folks, but of, I guess, the big kids task force, that does have WMATA staff on it from their strategic planning group. Sean Cannon is one of the folks who is on that task force, so he is a WMATA voice at the table. He is one of many voices at the table, given that there are a lot of local representatives. I'm having a heck of a time speaking tonight. Given that there are a lot of local representatives on that task force, there is a bit of parochialism, I guess we can call it, like Virginia not giving a hoot about the Purple Line, for example. Or a lot of Prince George's is not all that curious about another Potomac River crossing. They don't think that's necessarily the best use of the region's dollars. So there's certainly parochialism that comes in whenever you've got these locally representative folks on any given task force. But WMATA is on that task force, so they at least have a voice. Will?
No, this is just a short question. Anyway, I just wanted to know, do they have a breakdown of committees like we do here? Similar.
The CAC does not. I'm not entirely sure whether the overall board does. I believe they do have committees. I'm sure they don't break down quite like ours do into safety, security, customer service, et cetera. But there are, I believe, committees at the board level there, but not at the citizens group level.
How can we, I guess, when are these happening again, the rider forums, or that's what we're trying to call them for PPP, but in terms of meeting the actual riders, getting their input for the survey, can we, like, join the CAC, or maybe not, and maybe we'll do our own thing, too, on top of it, but.
I'm happy to connect you with the COG staff who are doing this outreach. Okay. They are largely very enthusiastic and looking for ways to get more involved.
No.
Again, especially if they have ways of getting more involved with communities that are not traditionally well represented in all these kinds of transportation surveys. So I don't know all of their plans for what they are doing in terms of public outreach, but I will put you in touch and we can find out. Any other questions or comments or things you want to get off your chest? Yep. Yes. And And one very minor caveat to that is to get into the CAC building, no, sorry, to get into the COG building, you do need a photo ID. The driver licenses are a very easy way to do that, but just so you don't show up completely anonymous, an ID is required to get your visitor badge. You have a fake ID you're planning on bringing them? I've always used a driver's license. I've never tried using anything else, so I'm not entirely sure how something else would come across if you plan to use, like, your... I mean, if you... Both groups are about the same size. I think there might also be seven from each jurisdiction on the CAC, and then there's often at least one member of the public who attends those, and sometimes a handful of others, and also a few staff members as well, much as we have here. Yes. So, last meeting we ended up talking a lot about bylaws and the nitty-gritty of that, and this time we're talking about 2045, so I'm just trying to make sure that we try to hit as much of the spectrum as possible. And coming back to a slightly shorter-term outlook than 2045, my next intention is to actually, given that we do have some time today, talk to the various committees. We have not had much of a chance to do that in the last couple of months, but this time we do. So, one thing that I have mentioned to a couple of the committees, I don't think I've hit everybody on this one yet, I'm hoping that either tonight or over the course of the next couple of weeks, you can provide me with, I'm hoping for two plus, between two and five, ideas of things that you will actually accomplish between now and the end of your tenure, or at least between now and the end of the year. I know that a lot of the committees have accomplished a fair number of things already. Customer service visits come to mind. A lot of things have been done. But in terms of creating a work plan so that the WMATA board can see it and know that we are not just completely flying by the seat of our pants, only partially, it would be great to have something to show them to say that each of the committees will be doing whatever it may be. So that is something that I'm hoping that the committee chairs in particular can either be thinking about or have been thinking about. So let me know what your plans are. You don't necessarily have to know exactly when you're going to accomplish them, but if you tell me what you plan to accomplish, then that becomes what I hold you to over the next couple of months. So keep that in mind. And so I will start with Colin. We'll go around the table and let us know what you got.
Sure. So we did a series of follow-up questions. The questions we initially submitted to our concert team. Enjoys the process of building those and finding all the right people. So, I mean, a number of them were informational requests. So while we're awaiting those answers, we've also been working on developing a set of recommendations for in-service communications, which is Nick's brainchild, but also stemmed from our discussion and Mr. Hoffman's. Really kind of trying to put together some standards for
part of that considering trying to get into the training for the station managers?
Yes, that is also one of the things that I put in. I probably would like kind of a final answer on that one way or another, because we have gotten a lot of mixed information. I mean, we heard from the GM himself that yes, we can
yes.
do that.
He seemed very positive about
that.
That
seems
indicate
like
that it would be no big deal.
Yes,
of course.
I might like to chat with somebody about that, so we can kind of get down to what the real issue is. I mean, I understand that, you know, employees may not want someone kind of like hovering over them, but, you know, the customer that they are serving, you know.
Is the concern from the trainer's side or those being trained? Is it from the student side or the teacher's side? Want us to know what they're being taught?
You know, I thought what we wanted to do is not necessarily see all the training material, but be part of the training.
I want both.
Or both. You want both. And they, I want to make sure I understand this. People who are being trained don't want anybody from the DAC to be part of the curriculum.
That their job has been to be in the spotlight once they graduate and go out and represent us.
Well, did you hear that from,
so let's find whoever the ultimate authority is there and maybe set up a chapter.
It's like a bunch of second graders saying they don't want to be a physical education.
Well, I mean, you know, we don't want to be an interference, but, you know, we do better understand how customers.
They're being trained to interact with riders, and we're the riders.
Sure. So, yeah. And ultimately, it's a public agency. So.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to think that, you know, if we're able to participate in the safety training.
Mm-hmm. More relevant to the rider experience. And feel free to put them in touch with us if they have further questions. Paul.
Thank you, Pasita, for saying what you said, that it's good to be part of the curriculum and be constructive for how we're handling this, as opposed to saying, you know, hovering. So thank you for mentioning that. Question about the Rider's Bill of Rights. What happened? I don't know if that was something you were working on, Colin, but that sounded really intriguing just when you mentioned it. Maybe there's some history to that, since I'm new, but it'd be I think that'd be really cool to see on a website. You go to WMATA's website. Here's the you know, here's the writer's bill of rights, or you know.
I mean, before my time. They do not have. Let's be clear. It does not. It does not exist. What it, they did. They did to know one draft of the recommendation before and what will be happening via back and forth between draft and draft report. Let's go down to the theory of the alleged writers. We'll try to do the best service that we can. As safe as we can. So that's ultimately what came of it, but it wasn't really a right to go to rights. Which I would expect to do things like we don't provide the best service we can. Here's you know the remedy.
My only response to that is that we're most effective. Very specific. Kind of narrow, nice, because I'm afraid the Bill of Rights will. If you break up the Bill of Rights, that's all you need. That's just the best use of that. That's just how you figure out something specific that you want.
And this actually, like, so I Googled it, because I saw it when I was looking into, you know, writing this column or whatever, and seeing what we're working on, supposedly. So I Googled WMATA RAC customer pledge, and the first thing that comes up is a PDF that says RAC proposed Metro customer expectations, and it shows, basically, bottom line, Metro provides a safe, reliable, cost-effective, pleasant ride for from entry to exit to all riders throughout the Metro transit system. This includes train, blah, blah, blah. And you have bus service, train service, Metro access, safety metrics, customer service. But I think because previous RACs have already started this, I do think that it's somewhat important to at least have this basic, like this baseline, from which to build, and then to also zero in, because that's super important to target and make our voice known on particular things, so we could have evolutionary changes also, in addition to revolutionary changes. But yeah, because this has been started already, I feel like we should build onto it or get this done. And it'd be a great, if not influential, at least symbolic, so we could at least see what our vision is, what we're trying to map onto, and point to something that's more tangible than currently what we have, which is something somewhere, but we're not really unified around that, I don't think, as much as this could potentially be. So yeah, I think we should do something. Yeah. Exactly. I was just shocked when I saw it. I was like, what? Never got adopted, but like, what? It got adopted for sure. I don't see it anywhere, so that's even scarier. Yeah. Well, not like this. Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, definitely. So.
Yeah, it's a pledge.
But you know, we. Exactly. Currently, I don't think we're doing the pledge, to be honest. Like, I don't see it anywhere. Like, this is the first time when I Googled it. It was the first time I saw it. So, that in my book is just as bad, if not worse, than, you know, not having one at all, because we're not really enforcing it. We're not doing anything with it. It's like, I don't think they actually. Well, it's on there about. It's proposed, yeah. So, it's proposed. So, it's not actually.
Colin, anything else customer service wise?
Nope.
Okay. Sitza, sure. I know you've got at least one update.
Yes, we have some very exciting updates. So I'll start with the big one first. So thanks a lot to Paul and to Joy. We had our committee had a really fruitful conversation with Nina Albert on Friday. Nina Albert is is WMATA's director for real estate and parking. So in that capacity, she oversees. She oversees opportunities for WMATA to bring in retail into its stations and to use its property for, you know, creative ideas. And so one of the topic that we discussed with her was this idea of possibly bringing in retail, whether that be little shops, little kiosks, or other types of vendors into stations for two purposes. One, of course, for WMATA's own revenue and money making. And two, for, you know, for rider convenience and enjoyment. And so we found out from her, we had a great conversation. So WMATA is making a lot of progress on that front. They hired a retail consultant a few years ago and conducted a feasibility analysis. They looked at every single station and looked at how much space they had, you know, what types of power outlets and, you know, locations, you know, they could develop. And originally they found potential at 12 different stations. But actually, Nina told us that they're revisiting that, and they think that the potential is much greater, that, you know, maybe half of the stations could actually could host some sort of retail. And so she told us that her team is submitting, what is it, request for information, was it? RFP? All right, yeah. RFI? It was an RFI. Yeah, and... An interest, there we go, request for interest. And they sent that out, or they are sending that out to a bunch of retailers, a bunch of vendors across the D.C. area, and, you know, asking to see whether or not there's interest, whether or not people would be amenable to this idea of, you know, trying to bring in one of their stores, you know, into a WMATA station, which is actually pretty cool. And so she actually sounded really optimistic and said that she hopes by the end of the next 12 months to have at least something in place for plans moving to really develop something. And so, but she was very curious about our ideas, and this is kind of why I really wanted to talk about this and have a discussion with everybody today. So we identified lots of, like, little types of retail opportunities. It could be, you know, vending machines. She was really gung-ho about vending machines because they don't require someone to staff them, right? And, you know, they don't require somebody to come in and lock up every day and to, you know, reconfigure it every single day. You know, it's there and it's easy to manage. But also the idea of, you know, it could be carts selling food or little souvenirs. We talked about the idea of, you know, of florists, you know, especially like Valentine's Day selling things. And we also came to the realization that these kind of already happen. You know, you often see these little kiosks, these little retailers already right outside of metro stations or selling magazines or newspapers or whatnot. And so she was really interested in the ideas that we had as the RAC and what riders would like to see. In terms of, you know, be it bottled water or little soda or snacks, or would riders prefer, you know, sort of non-food items that they could purchase. She was really interested to hear what types of retail opportunities we would like to see in stations. And that will help guide her in terms of kind of looking for those, whether, you know, looking for companies to reach out to for this RFI. So if there are any sort of, you know, Catherine or Paul, Amazon lockers. Yeah.
Interesting. That's a little bit of cynicism right there. Just wherever your package gets stolen from.
And this was definitely a concern. Paul, feel free to jump in because I know you talk a lot about this, but it was definitely a concern that we kind of addressed. And, you know, yeah, I guess at the end of the day, right, you have to balance that. We definitely don't want to have retail then sacrifice the cleanliness of our system. And, you know, so it could be just limiting it to, like, bottled water, right, which is pretty clean. But Paul, do you want to jump in?
So that's a good question. We talked about, by the way, first thing, Nina mentioned right off the bat the Amazon lockers. So, yeah, she did. She did. She mentioned Amazon. I don't know if she said something about UPS.
UPS.
Someone have something. And there is, and I looked that up today. I think I sent you the link on that. Lockers that you can have that Amazon, I guess, is starting to implement. I could totally see that. I mean, just off the top of my head, I could see a station like Columbia Heights having that, or you know, any station where there's a lot of people that really would love to have something, you know, or they might be a little worried about having their Amazon packages sold, and they use the service like that. And so she mentioned that in particular. The food thing is a really, really, she was very concerned about food, and she has said that that's why we are, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but she's not here to chime in on it, but she liked the bottled water concept. Especially at, like, she talked about Smithsonian, where there aren't a lot of retail opportunities available.
Right, yeah.
On top of the aspect, then you got National Park Service that's obviously, as you guys have been reading the news lately, they've been very upset about people selling things on the mall. So having that, and it's kind of hard to tell someone with a bottle, you know, when it's 95 degrees outside, who has a bottle of water, put that away. And, you know, she really, really
she
liked
was,
that.
Yeah.
Meal.
And she was also, yeah. So that's that would work well with the policy. And Nina was also especially enthusiastic about looking for, like, non-food opportunities. So, I mean, when you think about retail, you traditionally think about food, and she kind of floated it as this idea of, like, just getting, you know, maybe selling little snacks just to get people to the shop. But then the shop itself would actually specialize in selling something else. Yeah.
She was also, she talked about a particular vendor, I might as well just say it, Hudson News, for example.
Right, yeah.
They had a conversation, I think a preliminary conversation, about bringing Hudson News into some of our stations. You know, Hudson News, you see them in the airports and a lot of, like, you see them at Penn Station and that. Hudson News says, well, we're not going to come in unless we can sell food and drink.
Right.
They said that's the inventory that moves, not the souvenirs, just not the postcards. Food and drink that really subsidizes what's going on. And yeah, she is, like I reiterate, she is looking to balance the food and drink versus the garbage.
Right.
That could have, you know, that your station manager is going to have to work, or the staff is going to work harder to clean.
Of course. We don't want that.
They're going to have to. If you're going to have to drink, that's going to happen. Yeah. It's going to happen.
And these proposed vending machines / retail spaces will be within the fair gate, right?
I believe a lot of them will be outside.
Would be outside, like in the tunnels that lead to the station or, in the area where people...
Some of them have very large mezzanines. Yeah. And part of the reason for putting them out there is that they're reducing slightly the number of fare machines that are out there. So there is suddenly space. Those fare machines are approximately the size of a vending machine. And they all need to be plugged in. So suddenly you've got the space and the plugs to allow for some vending machine opportunities. And some of the stations have very large mezzanines. You could set up quite a bit in there.
What, Bob, do you have an idea?
I've got a couple, Bob. Yeah. How much revenue that will gain?
Yeah, she said not a whole lot. Yeah.
I think one of the nice things about Metro is it's relatively almost nobody. Observation.
I'm really excited for this, and I would have joined the call if there was another meeting during that time, but just because I know it's also for revenue generation also, but also for the rider and just maximizing their, because we're going to be waiting longer periods of time for the next train. Anything that we can do to maximize the little time that we have in D.C., I think that's great. So it's also convenience to the rider. I think it's
okay. This is great. Can I ask, Joe, Bob, anyone, have you ever ridden the Metro and said to yourself at some point, man, I wish I had this right now. Something that I could buy.
Of course.
Beyond food, which, I realize. Beyond food, which I realize.
Water,
headphones, and battery.
What
type of non-food items do you think could be successful as retail in the Metro?
In Barcelona, in the Metro station, they had machines.
Headphones.
It's like an electronic gadget. Yeah.
Okay.
But not in the
right.
Price.
Yeah. Yeah. She had also suggested the idea of umbrellas. A lot of people might be walking, they don't have their umbrella with them, and you can buy a cheap, $5 one.
Metro.
No, I'm just kidding.
Right. Well, the downtown stations are
really
nice.
Yeah, a lot of people.
That you already find them.
Right.
Otherwise, it's kind of ends up being sort of a tactical thing. A Hudson News.
Well, medicine even.
Suggested a little kind of almost like a little CVS kiosk.
Yeah, convenience.
I think I sent you the.
You did.
Yeah, the drug committee mark.
Yeah, there's like, if you go online, there's pictures of what those things are, and they sell like, Tylenol and
right,
things like
that. Right,
or
kitchen packs and whatnot, yeah.
I think you might be able to swipe, like your debit card at that.
Yeah. Now, granted, I think they had done some research on other systems selling retail, and it seemed like the middle, sort of most of them, actually all of them, did make some money, you know, maybe $1 million, $2 million, $5 million a year. Nothing to like cover the huge hole, but you know, still, respectable chunk of change.
So this is a deliverable that we will provide to the board. They asked us to provide some feedback, so we'll do that via a letter. And I guess I will work with Sita on putting that together.
Yeah.
More than happy to let you take the lead on that one, but we can provide them with Rec's general comments and any feedback we have about things that would be particularly good to sell should they go the retail route.
Yeah, absolutely. And Paul.
I think Joy was mentioning something about like a survey that we could possibly maybe have like a, I imagine other people in the public are going to want to hear something about this, right? I think you were talking about having like a little survey. I don't know how that works on social media, but
I think, Nina and Albert mentioned that they're coming up with a survey that's sort of sent to the public, engaged, interested in items that people would want to buy on the metro.
I'm sure we can help out. I'm sure we can help out with that.
Yeah,
maybe
absolutely.
Could, in the letter you were talking about with Hank and Nina.
Yeah, we'll bring
it
up.
We'll talk about that.
Well, thank you, everybody. Yeah, and I think going forward, we're going to try to keep having the budget meeting be focused on like interaction with staff. So maybe, on average, every other meeting for our budget committee, we'll try to sort of call in somebody. Could be someone like Nina who does retail, or somebody who works on budget. So stay tuned for more.
Okay. Joe.
All right. PPP. So, I know, right? What do you mean? Okay. Interesting. So, the GGW column, so that final draft got circulated to them. They actually said, we're probably not going to do it. Like, we're not going to do it. And then I kind of pushed back also. Jonathan, like one of the editors, he replied and said that he would work with me on the links and to actually get it edited again. So if they don't do it by August, honestly, I'm thinking of just making it into a fact sheet, because the next thing we're going to work on is like writer forums or fora, but we're going to call it forums, or I don't know what you're going to call it. We're going to call it, but just so that we have monthly interactions directly with the writers at Metro Station. So I was hoping starting this August, I definitely will be doing it. And we're like developing a toolkit to kind of help activate this wherever you guys are planning to do it for your jurisdictions. So a fact sheet will be prepared along with anything else that Joy or like WMATA staff has, so that we could, potentially even host like a table or something where we can interact with writers directly. Like if we do that once a month, or even for, it doesn't have to be once a month, but it could even be once per quarter. But if it's part of one of our 8 roles and responsibilities that's directly in the bylaws, like we're supposed to be holding these. So the fact that we're not, kind of like, at least for me, I didn't know about it until I started writing this column and looking to the bylaws. And I've read the bylaws before, but I've never focused on them because, you just kind of get into them. But once you read it, you're like, oh, whoops, we're supposed to be doing this. And it makes a lot of sense because we should be, even though we're writers ourselves, to actually get more writer input to inform our decision-making or whatever.
Would all of these events that you're talking about, these fora with the writers, be in person, or would any of them be virtual?
It could be virtual, too. So that's the thing, because I want it to be as accessible as possible to everyone, and I know as a former teacher, I can expect every parent to come into parent-teacher conferences at that particular time. So we do have like hangouts and stuff like that too. So definitely open to brainstorming those possibilities too. Definitely we should. If anything, like live streaming or not. But it really depends on each individual board member, or not board member, fact member, like what he or she wants to do. what are quarterly, what are half biannually, but I think the metric should be quarterly, if not monthly. Just once, you know, for like maybe 1 hour. I think it could be potentially really nice. And I'm thinking if we could have, maybe not like a tablecloth thing, like just some insignia to show that we are, I mean, we do have the rack logo, but just to show that we are rack members, like button or, you know, we could make some t-shirts, whatever. Or just buy a Metro, that's what I did, like buy a Metro map shirt and then just have like a little, hello, my name is whatever thing. But part of the toolkit will be like a Google form, Google Doc form, whatever, that people can fill out if they want to submit ideas. That'll also, before the next meeting, be on the Facebook page. Like, everyone's been allowed to share, like, here's some ideas. Or not ideas, contribute your ideas. So that was one main thing. Also, this weekend, I'm going to circulate. I already sent this to Joy, Paul, and Catherine. It was a long time ago, though, like back in April or May-ish. But this whole concept of getting Metro chargers or Metro-retro, like retrofitting existing outlets that aren't being used. So behind every one of those illuminated Metro signs, for the most part, because I tracked, and it's really gross, but I tracked that joke behind, there's like an outlet. And there are a lot of them scattered around Metro stations, but to the extent that we can make the journey more seamless for riders who are probably going to catch an Uber or Lyft or something, or contact their family who's here, if they're tourists, or just loved one, or just calling up a friend or texting someone, if their phone dies, which inevitably millions of riders suffer through this problem every year, to provide them at least a temporary outlet where they could charge their phone so that they could move on with their lives. Until we have, like, one day, hopefully COG is working on this for the 2045, but, like, all access activation throughout every tunnel, like, where they could use those phones with chargers. I know Metro buses, they have this. They have, like, a USB outlet. Or maybe not Metro buses, the circulators. They have, like, a USB outlet where you could charge. But, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then Delta, or like, yeah, some company like Samsung or whatever, they usually sponsor these things. And so to the extent that we can get sponsorship like this, there are also these booths that people do, like Neiman Marcus or Saks or Macy's or whatever. They have these chargers where you could put in your phone and type in your info and then like your email or text, your phone number to like leave. And if that might not be so good of an idea because people have to leave right away, but yeah, another way to get information of riders, keep the information stored, we'll monetize that potentially, or not. And so, yeah, so that's that. And I know New York and other cities are moving towards this route. So to the extent, since we're focusing now not necessarily on reliability, we're done with that, I guess. Or we're never done with that. But we're focusing more, intensifying or focusing more on, you know, the customer experience part of it, or rider experience portion of it, to the extent that we can provide these outlets for riders would be a welcome thing. It doesn't need to be big. It could start at Metro Center where I am. Start small and scale smart. But yeah, I think riders would welcome this. Of course, they'll be like, well, we need, you know, trains on time and all of that too. But I think, yeah, Wi-Fi in general has been a good, you know, like that's what they call. I'm like, well, I'm talking about this right now, but yeah, but Wi-Fi in general, people have been pretty satisfied with it, or not, you know, they're like, we have to check the terms and conditions every time, whatever, but I mean, it's better than nothing, you know, so. Oh my gosh. Oh goodness, yeah. That's true. Or not. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Any questions for Joe?
I'm not opposed to anything like that. Like, I'm not looking for anything splashy per se, because if we can, if those outlets are open to that, then definitely I welcome that. But if not, then I'm not going to really focus my energies on just pushing for these outlets to, you know. But definitely, if there are any outlets out there that are listening, there probably aren't. But we are open to this.
yeah. Martin DeCaro is on the hunt for stories.
Yeah, right. Metropocalypse or whatever. Yeah, I finally shared.
Not podcast. I don't think it'll get a podcast. But,
So I shared the RAD Facebook page on Metropocalypse. Because Paul mentioned it. I actually didn't know Martin. I'm going to say that in here. But I did hear Martin DeCaro all the time. I love him. And WMU and everything. But in terms of, where was I going with that? We have 96 likes, which isn't 100 yet. But we have 102 or so follows. But yeah, we're without any, and we have a $30 credit. Like, Facebook says we're big enough that they're willing to give us a $30 credit for, like, advertisement. So, yeah. So, I guess think about things that you want to advertise, because, you know, it's not my money, it's our money. So, like, whatever you want to advertise, like, whenever we have a push, like, think of something, and then we could do more of an expensive reach or whatever.
I guess, you know, my frustration.
They did mention that. They did say
they
that.
May not fit their formatting.
They did say that, but it's just in terms of.
So, and I would say that, you know, any publication for this will actually do that. So,
yeah.
You know, and we had transportation for the Washington Post here.
Exactly.
And
I think they're the RAC, they were also mentioning, like, the, you know, the safety visits that we do to, like, and all, just like the loss and found stuff, like those visits to customer service stations or whatever. Like, WMATA has to be okay with that too, but I don't see why they wouldn't be. But I'm just wondering if you guys were open to that. Because for me, I was just like, okay, you guys could do whatever you want to do, but honestly, like, I wouldn't focus. I didn't want to put all my eggs in their basket if they're not going to follow through on things. So, but I think it's perfectly fine. Like, I don't really care. Like, if they're open to, you know, no one's stopping them to, like, joining, yeah, so, including me.
I agree with what Colin said. In fact, I wrote that to the editor last week saying, well, you know, instead of, like, having us try to write in the style that you guys have, we'll just tell you when we're doing something, and if you want to send somebody, like, if there is no problem with, if we don't have a problem with you guys going to the customer service center or taking part in the exercise or learning about retail in the metro station, I mean, those are great things that your readers are really going to want to know about. Just invite you to come along and handle it that way. But the issue was to get us out there on the border as RAC members. But if this was a great alternative, then there's no problem with RAC doing that.
So it sounds like definitely one of the goals that y'all have for the next couple of months is getting the word out through as many media channels as possible, whether it be GDW or a number of others. I think there are probably enough contacts around this table that they've got ways of making that happen. Will do. Okay, I am going to give a very brief update about the board meeting last month, just because it's always entertaining these days. And then I'm going to turn it over to Valerie to close us out with some good news. Just wanted to alert you yet again that if you're ever bored on the Thursdays of WMATA board meetings, I have a solution for you, and I highly recommend coming to them because they're frankly theaters of almost the absurd at this point. Well, that perhaps is taking, maybe that's not exactly how I should phrase it, but. not quite to that level. However, the union does like to make their presence known. And at the most recent committee, or at the most recent board meeting, their solution to that was to bring a coffin. And it turned out that WMATA security staff did not allow the coffin into the building. However, they did leave it outside on the plaza in front of Jackson Graham here. And there was a tombstone, a headstone that went along with it that said, RIP, good transit service, and good middle-class jobs. They don't appear to be, there was also quite a bit of fake blood, yes. They don't appear to be real pleased with the way that the talks are going. There were also, all the union members wore white shirts, and they had red paint that everybody dipped their hands in. Then they had red handprints on their shirts, so there were a number of times that it was brought up that WMATA, in prioritizing things other than the union expertise that exists, will have blood on its hands the next time there is an incident or somebody gets hurt on the system. So the union made their point. So if you ever feel a need to have a coffin, enter your average Thursday. I don't know what the next meeting will be. I'm not entirely sure how they continue to top themselves. But there's always something going on. They got some attention, which was absolutely their point. But all right, and with that, I will give it to Valerie. No death. Definitely. All right, one last point for everybody. Next month is August. Congress is not in town, not that that's necessarily relevant to us. The WMATA board does not meet in August. The Accessibility Advisory Committee does not meet in August. We do meet in August. At least we are scheduled to right now. But I am leaving it up to a majority of the board to determine whether we would like to have an August pause or whether we want to meet in August. I'm certainly happy to meet in August, but if we think that we'd be better served by taking a break and meeting again in September, wanted to find out what everybody thought about that. Open for discussion. Well, that would be horrid.
I would like to meet, but
so I was.
But if there's more flexibility in terms of dialing in or whatever, I would welcome that. I would like to meet. I'm open to not meeting also.
All right, so I propose that we vote on canceling the August meeting. All in favor? Six ayes and one I don't care, but the hand's up, so we're going to count it as a no. All right, so 7-4, so that's the majority, so we'll go on an August pause, and we'll see everybody again in September. I mean, if people are just having a WMATA craving, we could do a RAC happy hour for whoever's around.
RACcation. No.
That sounds very reasonable.